welcome to Epilogue, the only show that cuts into the big issues behind the best books on politics and world affairs. I'm Derek Conway, and this week we're reviewing Exploding Middle East Myths, 15 Years of Fighting Zionist Propaganda. In this epilogue, we'll review the book and the issues around it. But before I tell you about my studio guests, let's take a look at this brief introductory video.
Since its creation in 1948, Israel has carefully controlled what the Western world know about the Zionist state. The result is that what we have received from the mainstream media is reams of propaganda and little truth when it comes to the racist and bellicose state. The author is a journalist who goes against this backdrop of censored news, taking a dangerous stand and telling the truth about Israel for the last 15 years. In this collection of powerful essays, Felton shows the real Israel. Brutal treatments of Palestinians, blatant disregard for Christians and Muslims, and parasitic control over foreign governments, especially the US. Today in Epilogue, we will review the book Exploding the Middle East Myths, 15 Years of Fighting Zionist Propaganda by Greg Felton.
As that brief video showed, from establishing the first myth of land entitlement through to the imposed creation of the State of Israel, the Zionist lobby has waged a hugely effective lobbying campaign in the West and the United Nations, deploying both charm and intimidation, but above all, bribery. The extent of the systematic distortion of the facts and the web of influence created to sustain it is exposed with brutal clarity by Greg Felton in this book. And to consider his work, I'm joined in the Press TV studios by Neil O'Shea, a photojournalist and writer who worked 4 years in BBC Radio, and by Gilad Atzmon, an Israeli-British musician, writer. Welcome to both. Now, you've read Greg's missive. What did you make of it, Gilad?
I think that it's pretty brilliant. I was slightly disappointed in the beginning when I realized that it was actually a collection of articles. Yeah. I read a recent work by Greg, and was very impressed, a book that he wrote about the domination of Zionist control within America, and a very good scrutiny of the process of the Zionification of America. But what was astonishing for me about this book is that how many insights this man has accumulated along those years. Some of them are very astute. Already in 2001, he realized where we are going. More than anything else, this book contains inflammatory language, and this is what is so wonderful about it. Mm. Unfortunately, we are living in a world that is dominated by some bizarre concepts of political correctness that have reduced our ability to say what we think, even to ourselves, even to express it within our own intimate and close associate relationship. He is not shy off. It doesn't all these punches. He says what he wants to say. When you think that Israel should be equated with Nazi Germany, he calls Israel the Zionist Reich. He speaks about the Zionist Lebensraum. This is
very, very controversial. He doesn't follow the line. What did you make of it, Neil?
Well, I thought this book was it was mad, bad, and it was very sad. I think it's sad because quite an intelligent man, quite a well-educated man, can write this silly propaganda. I thought it was bad because he supports a lot of the bad guys around the world, like Hamas and Islamic militants. And I think it was also mad because he is very good at insulting his critics and putting his critics down in a very rude and offensive way. He calls Obama, he calls Hillary Clinton some very rude names, which are clearly unfair. And he's also, as you say, very controversial and very shocking, which I'm glad to support in a liberal democracy like the UK. I mean, as you mentioned, he claims that the Holocaust came about with a collaboration between the Nazis and Zionists and the Jewish community itself, who conspired together to murder millions of Jews, which is quite outrageous. You know, it's offensive, and I'm sure it's completely false. But it's good to have false allegations like this in a free country. But we must always respect the fact that they could be false.
Do you think he takes it to almost a far end because he is under such pressure as a journalist? Because it's not easy to go against the Israeli propaganda machine, whether you think it's true propaganda or whether you think it's false propaganda. The fact is it's very effective propaganda. And to take that on and challenge it in any way, it's brave or even mad. I don't know.
It's mad. It's also brave. But yep. I think there's a strong case that if you lose your argument, if you lose your temper, you lose the argument. If you, you know, become extremely rude, you lose your argument. Yeah. If the facts are in your favour, you don't need to sell them that strongly because everyone can quite simply see what's true and what's wrong.
Yeah, I mean,
you call it mad, and then you try to substantiate it. Talking about factuality, and you have decided to pick the Holocaust and Jewish or Zionist complicity in this crime. You said that it is outrageous to come with such a suggestion, but unfortunately, all the facts that he mentions in the book are now established facts. You know, you can go home and read about the Katzner affair. You can read about, there is a book called The Zionist Collaboration between, there's a collaboration, 53, 51 documents of Zionist collaboration with the Nazis. Hannah Arendt speaks about it already in 62 in a fabulous book about Eichmann trial. Those actually are facts and they are well established. It is possible that you are not familiar with these facts, but it is slightly outrageous to call a person who is actually educated on the subject mad that just because it presents a narrative that you feel uncomfortable with.
I mean, I've checked what he said, and I checked on the internet about these allegations that the Jewish community collaborated with the Nazis to bring about the murder of millions of Jews. And the opinion by many experts is that he's been very selective in picking very selective quotes from Jewish critics. But a lot of those critics, he claims, who support him, or support his argument, have denied wanting to have anything to do with him or his argument because they say he has been too selective. Okay.
Because we don't have a huge amount of time to spend the entire program talking about some Holocaust denial, wherever that fits in. It is referred to in the book, so you're quite right. It is a part of the book. But the book is obviously much broader than that because what it's really focusing on is the influence on the media. I mean, Press TV comes under a lot of pressure as well because it doesn't put out a standard line. And there undoubtedly seems to be, and you must have experienced this in your journalistic life, that if you're not following the recognized steady average line, you come under an awful lot of pressure, and the Israeli government is very effective at putting that sort of pressure on people. If you're critical of them in any way, you will be attacked as a journalist. I don't mean physically, but your reputation will certainly be attacked.
Yes, I don't think there's any serious threat by this. The Israelis pose no threat to many journalists in the press. The BBC, for example, has been criticised for taking an anti-Israeli line, and also a lot of the press. The left-wing press are very pro-Palestinian and, in some cases, anti-Israeli. But their arguments are respected and accepted, but they're discussed in a constructive way by the Jewish community, by the Israelis. And I don't think there's a single case where an anti-Israeli sentiment or argument has received abuse or really prominent offensive criticism by the Israelis. Within Israel itself, there is a fantastic variety of opinions on Israel, on Zionism, on world issues, on the left, on the right. So how can you say that the Israeli government and the Zionists are intolerant of their critics when I think they embrace their critics, they have a dialogue with them, and they hope to win the argument with them? And in most cases, they do win the argument with the anti-Israeli, anti-Jewish case.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that this book exposes is the fact that the Israelis do not have to do much because they are operating a very big network of collaborators, what in Mossad language is called Sayanim, helpers, and they are doing the job. And it is an extensive network. We know, for instance, that 80% of Tories Parliament MPs are members of the CFI, the Friends of Israel.
Yeah.
And this network mounts pressure, severe pressure, on each media outlet in America and Britain. And the Israelis can just sit and relax while their helpers around the world are doing the job. And this book exposes it. It exposes. It speaks about Hasbara. It tells how
this Hasbara on page 99. That's an area of the internet. I mean, people keep up with what's going on, and there's this huge monitoring operation that goes on, and a rebuttal operation that's actually quite widespread and quite sophisticated. Do you think it's maybe a bit sinister as well that it exists to...
I think there's nothing sinister about it. It is simply another lobby group. And within Parliament, there are hundreds or thousands of lobby groups, trade unionists, the left, the right, medical issues, you know, medical companies. So it's just a good, very effective, powerful lobby group that is not a threat to democracy or free speech. You take what they say with a pinch of salt, you don't always believe it, but you listen to it. And then you look at the widestream media, BBC, ITV, Sky, the good newspapers we have in this country, The Independent, who give you opinions and facts on what the Jewish lobby may have to say. And in many cases, we don't accept the Jewish lobby.
I think part of the image.
What I'd just like to do is take a very quick look at an extract from the book, because it's all part of sometimes about Israel's maintenance of sort of victim status. And I think it's an interesting extract from the book I'd like us to take a look at, where there was a proposal to build a mosque in New York near the site of the 9/11, and a tremendous row erupted. And this is the author's interpretation of what the local politicians, including the mayor of New York, had to say about it.
Jews, of all people, should know that we have to support religious liberty, because if you can block a mosque, you can block a synagogue. Here we see the voice of reason, Al-Qaeda comment notwithstanding, raised against the broad brush smear of all Muslims as terrorists. But for all his accuracy, Nadler misses the point. He assumes the protesters to be misguided, that they erroneously conflate extreme political Muslims with average American Muslims. There is no error here. The protesters are not interested in analogies between mosques and synagogues or upholding concepts like religious liberty. Their sole purpose is to incite hatred and fear of Muslims so that Israel can coerce Americans into believing that Muslims deserve to be mistreated.
And what I was using that extract to illustrate is this view that if you can try and equate in the mind of the average watching member of the public that Muslim equates with terrorist, that Israel equates with being under fire from Arab nations around it, it maintains a sort of victim status. So it obviously helped in the creation of the place in the first place. And that seems to go on as a campaign. I mean, Neil, you mentioned the coverage the BBC gives to issues. I think saying it's anti-Israel would be pushing a bit far, because whenever it covers Palestinian issues, it tends to be about bombings that have happened or whatever. It doesn't actually cover much the actual issues behind Palestine, because the mainstream media in the UK doesn't really go near that topic. I mean, do you think we get a balanced report in the media?
Certainly not. Certainly not. And it is very clear, especially in Britain and America, that these two countries launched a criminal war against Iraq in 2003. At the time, Lord Levy was the chief fundraiser for this country. I don't say that there is a necessary connection, but it is... This war is realized by most of us as a war that was serving primarily Israeli interest. It is not surprising that this fact is not discussed properly in the media. Those who come up with these ideas that are becoming obvious to more and more people are regarded, like people like yourself, as mad. But we are not mad. We see what is going on. We see that 1.5 million Iraqis lost their life in a criminal war. And I would like now to go back to your issue about the lobby. It is wonderful to have lobbies.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. But there is something, I agree, but there is something very unique about the Israeli or Jewish lobby, the way we like to call it. Jewish lobby or Israeli lobby promotes in our midst foreign interest. This is very unusual. So, for instance, if you would have a lobbyer in Britain of a Pakistani community, they would look mainly into promoting the interests of the Pakistani community in Britain, but the Israeli or the Jewish lobby, whatever you decide to call it, promoting a foreign interest. And this is unusual. This is unusual, and it is very unique to Jewish ideology.
But I mean, the resignation of Dr. Fox's defense minister sort of shone a light on that a little, hasn't it? Because he's been involved in attending these security conferences in Tel Aviv with his advisor, Mr. Werity, where they were talking about closer intelligence links between the UK security services and Mossad. Were you surprised by those sort of revelations?
I wasn't surprised.
It all comes under the lobbying umbrella,
yes,
in a way.
But I don't see the threat. I think you're being a little bit paranoid, because the fact two spying agencies from two good democracies should talk to each other against terrorist threats is not unusual. It's not nothing strange. In fact, I would hope they were talking to each other
when it was widely known that Mossad was using British citizens' names to provide false passports for assassination squads.
Well, I mean, that was inappropriate.
It's not a good use of friendly relations.
I agree, but that's not a true statement of the general way Mossad works. I mean, that was bad, and you know, the world has condemned it, and Britain has condemned it. But on the whole, Mossad is looking after the interests of a Jewish democracy called Israel, and perhaps the Jewish community worldwide. And we must respect, throughout the world, there is a very genuine and effective Jewish community that deserves to be protected from terrorism, from violence, and from propaganda like this book.
But do you think if a member of the British cabinet was running around with an advisor or otherwise, or whatever it's called, attending meetings with Palestinians, do you think that would be just regarded as an acceptable, normal thing that goes on? I've never known it happen, but...
Well, I mean, Palestinian lobbyists and British politicians speak to Palestinian friends all the time. I don't see the problem,
do?
Yes.
Vanessa Redgrave
upwards.
I've not experienced that level of lobbying in the UK,
absolutely.
But maybe it just...
And there is another thing. You have to be very careful with your language. You just defined Israel as a... A good democracy, and a few seconds later, you called it a Jewish democracy, which means that you actually admitted that it is racially or an ethnocentric democracy. By the way, Israel, and I'm sorry, I'm probably going to offend some of your viewers, not many of them, I hope, but Israel is not very different from that aspect from Nazi Germany, because Nazi Germany was a racial-centric state, expansionist, very violent, very much like Israel, as you admitted. It's a Jewish democracy. It's an ethnocentric expansionist state. How do you put two statements as such together without realizing that there is a clear discrepancy here?
Well, I think there's no discrepancy, because within the Jewish state you have Jews from many ethnic groups, from Somalia, from Ethiopia, from Russia, from all over the world.
Yeah, okay.
So it's
a multi-Jewish thing.
Well, it's a multi-ethnic, multicultural Jewish community.
It's not multicultural.
Which is very good.
Because
you have Jews from Somalia, you have Jews from Ethiopia there, Jews from South America, from Russia.
Don't the statutes in Israel refer to the non-Jewish minorities? I mean, it's written into the law in a way that you couldn't have in Britain. You couldn't have a law that said, you know, the non-Protestant minorities in Britain would be this, that, or the other. It would be hugely unacceptable in a democracy.
Well, I think there is evidence that the Jewish community gives priority to the Jewish community. The Jewish government gives priority to the Jewish community. Yeah. But that's to protect them from threats from the Islamic world and from non-Jews. To some extent, it's acceptable, but sometimes it does go too far. But we must remember that the 1 million Palestinians who live within Israel, I would say, have more human rights, equal rights, than can be found by Arabs living in neighbouring countries like Palestine, Syria, Bahrain, Iran, Saudi Arabia.
Do you find there is a problem with those who take part in the media? Do come under a lot of pressure. I mean, you know, Press TV is always under the scrutiny of Ofcom, and there's quite a sort of a monitoring lobby out there that if one word is said in the wrong way, then tremendous rows are manufactured and blown up, and this grinds people down after a while. You've got to follow the accepted line or you're in trouble, and that seems to be a growing problem in Europe and America. If you hold a different view, then you are exposed to an awful lot of pressure.
I tell you what is my take about it, and it is interesting. I think that the world around us is changing rapidly. I think that while a few years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, the BBC, the Guardian, the Times had a huge influence, it is now becoming a marginal player because the internet is much better source of information. I think that Press TV is the best thing that we have in this country, is the best press outlet. If I want to know what is happening in Palestine, what is happening in the conflict, I would go and watch Press TV. I wouldn't spend a second on BBC. The Guardian, which was kind of the outlet of the so-called left, is completely redundant. I can still see it in the shops, but I don't think that it will be there for much longer.
We haven't got much time left here, but do you think the internet is really changing the game of how people are going to get their information, particularly about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict?
I think so, yes. I mean, this American-born invention and British invention, the internet, it's a fantastic assistance to democracy, and it limits the voice extremists can have, and even powerful players like the BBC can have. Yeah. We were dependent on them in the past. Now we're not dependent, and we can listen to a whole range of different views, one of which is Press TV, which has a very small audience.
So we'll have to see how this goes, but I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. This is a book which is a series of lively articles, thoughtfully yet provocatively written, as the author tries to shine a different light on the myths peddled by the mainstream media in North America and Europe. As Felton shows, this bias against Muslims is not accidental, but part of a well-funded campaign orchestrated by Israel to maintain its victim status in order to secure Western military protection. More and more people are challenging the way Israel treats the Palestinian people, and this book helps bring some perspective to the unjustified land grab that shamefully continues to this day. I'd like to thank Neil and Gilad for joining us, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. If you have a book you'd like the program to review, we'd like you to keep getting in touch, and here's how.
The Epilogue team want you to continue with your book review suggestions. You can email us at epilogue@presstv.co.uk. And don't forget to join our Facebook page. Enter Epilogue on Press TV into the search bar. You can watch past episodes, leave comments, and take part in discussions with other Epilogue fans.
Keep your feedback coming, and until the next Epilogue, thanks for watching.